been at this effort for 5 years. And
California started efforts leading towards some form of retail restructuring about 5 years, a little over 5 years ago.
I think you mentioned that there was something like only 30,000 that actually changed or something. Do you know that from that experience, did the people that changed save some money, and were the other folks that didn't adversely affected by these changes, or is that it?
Well, what happened was that the restructuring in California started essentially April 1st of last year, and prior to its beginning, the state of California fostered a $7 billion bond issue that essentially recovered stranded costs for the existing local utilities. That $7 billion bond was then showed up as a separate item on each customer's bill as their share of the stranded cost recovery. There was a mandated, I believe, 10% reduction that was required to be offered to all customers at that time. And that 10% reduction sort of got whittled away by the surcharge for the recovery of stranded cost. There was a bit of a groundswell before the last elections to try and change the way that that restructuring was being implemented, but that did not go, and it was not successful. The consumers felt that in order to compensate them for the barrage of advertising and other discomforts of restructuring that were occurring, they should get a larger discount, and that the whole program should be structured another way. And it's still a big experiment.
Just one more, if I may. You mentioned that the fragile nature of Alaska's infrastructure. I thought we put quite a bit of money into it.
We have put a lot of money into it, you're right. But it is still a fragile infrastructure because what you have is a linear transmission system of fairly low voltage that connects the Kenai Peninsula or Homer on into Anchorage and then up to Golden Valley in Fairbanks. You've got to understand this transmission system is only rated 138 kV, which is a fraction of the for the transmission systems in the lower 48 that are not only much higher rated, they're much larger capacity, and they are duplicated. In other words, you can serve a given consumer, a given city, a given locale from any one of typically two or more directions, and sometimes as many as three or four. Ours is linear. You can only go one way. So when that transmission system goes down for any reason, as you might recall, August of 95, when we had the Cascade outage, brought about by very natural circumstances, one transmission line was down for normal maintenance and repair. A second one had a dead short due to a natural event, which was an eagle about the line, and the remaining transmission line couldn't carry the load, so the entire system went down. That's fragile.
Thank you.
Representative Cowder.
Thank you. What would you think of a law or forbidding utilities to charge more when they resell power at a higher rate than they sell their retail or residential customers?
It would be very hard to structure that law because there are so many different components of that service. For example, you have a secondary service going to a customer that provide and a transformer that feeds that. Now that transformer you have different sized equipment based upon the size of the load. So your embedded cost per kilowatt hour is very highly variable depending upon the end customer being served. So it's hard to make a one size fits all rule.
Isn't residential rates the highest rates?
They are because they're the smallest loads and they've got the largest investment to serve them. In terms of, if you look at their share of the distribution system, the residential load also, incidentally, speaking for myself, I'm on Chugach Country, and I just love the fact that I'm about a 10% load factor. you know, you turn your oven and your dishwasher and your washer and dryer on, and you're going to be pulling 12 to 15 kW off the system. That 12 to 15 kW with a commercial customer that says at a 50 or 60 or 80% efficiency would result in a bill that's about 10 or 12 times the size of mine because the kilowatt hour consumption would be so high. Residential consumers have very poor loads because their loads occur so sporadically over the day, typically coincidental with the peak load for the utility. That's when we experience our peak is 6 o'clock in the evening when everybody goes home and turns on the oven. So the cost to serve that consumer is very high because you have to have that 15 megawatts or kilowatts of power available for when that consumer wants to turn everything on. So you have an investment with poor return.
Did you have a question? Representative Roman.
Mr. Chairman, just Ms. Biller, using California as an example is not a really good example. If any state in the union has botched this thing, California has terribly. We ought to acknowledge that. I mean, you could talk about Pennsylvania, which is doing very well right now, as a matter of fact, just for the committee's information. So California is not a good example, I don't think. Would that be a fair statement? Or we could learn a lot from how not to do it from California. Would that be fair?
You could, but California is the farthest along of anybody. And they've been working on it the longest. That's the point that I was trying to make.
Well, they botched it. But that's not unusual for California when they try to do things by initiative, right?
That's right.
I'm very concerned about a comment you made in your testimony. That is to say that the Joint Committee, by its ambiguities, has created uncertainty among the utilities in the state. Now, I really am concerned about that because of the recommendations, which were minimal. And I think this may be engendered by perhaps your naive looking at the political process and the ability to have consensus among a large joint committee of any type of deliberative body. It's extremely difficult. So I really am concerned about that, and I just wanted to ask you a question. If you think that this committee and its members are ambiguous and uncertain because this committee was created as a result of that report.
Representative Roper, through the chair, I understand the concern that you have, but let me point out where the ambiguity comes from. The report clearly defines the concerns about the Alaska infrastructure, the Alaskan problems and issues that need to be addressed. In the findings, however, if you look at recommendations, if you look at item number 2, it basically suggests that a pilot program, if recommended by the consultant, should proceed more or less, and it does not even remand that back to the legislature for further action. It says if necessary, then legislature can consider legislation in order to implement that, but it leaves open the possibility that legislation would not be necessary to implement it and gives the APUC an unspoken directive that if they choose to do so, they may proceed. That's a concern.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I just could point out.
Okay. Very briefly, because we have 10 minutes till the session.
I know, it's very important, then, but I think you should not interpret one member of the committee's opinion about what the APUC will or will not do in this entire legislative body, including all 59 members. So I would warn you very strongly about that.
And with that.
Yes.
Mary, you folks can talk this over later if you'd like. It is now almost 10 minutes till 10. We have session at 10 o'clock. I want to thank the committee members. Thank for all of the presenters, Mara and Eric, all of you for coming up. And we are hereby adjourned.
Gavel to Gavel Alaska is brought to you by a major grant from the people of the community of Juneau. providing access to government by bringing legislative coverage into homes, offices, and schools across Alaska. By AT&T Alaskon, connecting Alaska, connecting the world. By the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, nearly 5,000 men and women proudly serving Alaska for over 50 years. And by Alaska Federal Savings.